right, here we are, episode 2 of The Last Word Podcast. It's called The Last Word Podcast, obviously, not The Last Word. That would be something else. With Chris and Illyrio. I'm Chris.
I'm Illyrio.
And this week we have a special guest, the man I can't leave alone for any length of time.
Indeed, yes. Hello, I'm Joe.
Your co-host of Joe and Chris Do a Thing, and...
Yes.
Doctor Who, The 11th Hour Podcast... And possibly something else upcoming.
Nice.
Possibly. In fact, I recorded a podcast with you just yesterday, so...
You did.
I really can't get away from you, can I?
Nope, we love each other.
And we do.
Right, we reconvene after last week's page one episode of Press Gang. Before we crack on, quickly, Joe, I'd better ask for the listeners, what is your experience? Whoa! Pepsi Max. What?
Is my experience with Pepsi Max varied?
No, I better ask for the listeners, what is your experience with Press Gang?
Like pretty much everyone who's listening to this, and half of the people who are starring on it, I know about it because of you.
and I think you unlike decided, most of those people...
I'm not American.
you've also seen it all.
Yes, that is correct, yes. You showed it all to me. And I think Seb at the same time, yeah. Some years back, and I think I've rewatched maybe series 2 onwards more recently, or some of it, because those ones seem more clear to me. Whereas I went back and watched this, thinking I'd remember it really well, and there's a lot of stuff I'd forgotten in the kind of early days.
Yeah, it seems odd to mention it right now, but I recently came into possession. It turns out there was shitloads of stuff on the DVDs in the form of PDFs of the Press Gang program guide, but also some fanzines from around the time, and they had polls in which they suggested that Series 1 was in fact their least favourite.
Hmm.
Which
came as a surprise to me, because I remember us both quite enjoying Season 1.
Exactly.
Series 1, I mean it's all fairly good, but... I don't remember one as being the weakest.
So, anyway, I guess it's a thing to bear in mind. Yeah. If you're either enjoying or not enjoying Series 1, it'll either get better or it'll get immeasurably better.
Yeah.
Or everyone's an idiot. Those are the three options available to you.
Indeed. I think it's also worth pointing out that I just realised this, that even though I've known Illyrio for many years online, I've never actually had a conversation with him in real time.
Real time is really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I feel like I have, because you've sent voicemails into the 11th Hour podcast, and I've talked over them as if I'm talking to you. But I realise that's not quite the same thing.
Not quite, no.
No, you can't. Well, now you can defend yourself against any baseless accusations we level at you.
I must say that once Chris mentioned you coming on as a guest, one of my initial thoughts was, I can't wait to interrupt Joe!
It's really popular for some reason. Well, apparently.
No, I do it a lot, as you will have heard.
Yes.
And now I interrupt Illyrio instead. Ha ha.
It's nice listening to someone else, you know, get the brunt of it.
Oh boy. Right, well, if you listen to the latest Potential Cast, there's lots of awesome interrupting.
By me.
Fantastic.
I jest. It's lovely. It's welcome. I much rather have a guest that interjects than a guest that is listening to their favorite podcast live rather than waiting to download it.
Right. We are pressed for time, so I'm going to crack on. Are you ready?
Yep.
Yep.
Are you ready?
I'm also ready.
Thank you. therefore, we go into Press Gang Series 1, Episode 2, Photo Finish. The music happens immediately, so I'm going to play the music immediately.
That was awesome.
It's a fine piece. Sorry, Joe.
Do you know what bit I really like, even though it is the cheesiest piece of what is a very cheesy bit of music anyway, and it's
is it that pitch bend?
It's the bit you get when Colin comes on and it goes. Yeah, so it is the pitch bend bit. It kind of goes a little bit more sultry. For Colin, because he's the kind of geezer or whatever.
Yeah, well, he's your comedic bit. Yeah. later on, I spoke over Illyrio last week. He was amused by the Collins rotating chair reveal in the titles last time.
It's fantastic.
I know that people weren't happy. People weren't particularly happy with the theme tune. I can tell you they do change it later, and they make it worse. They keep the same tune, but it sounds worse.
That's awesome.
I can remember one change they do to the arrangement that is a bit dodgy as well. And I think you know what I mean, Chris.
And listen, I'm going to say this now because you'll forget about it until it happens again, and all of the listeners. They put I've always called him Mamaloki Christie, but I recently watched an old episode of Teen Win, Lose or Draw with him on.
Ooh.
Where he was pronounced as Maluki Christie, mm-hmm. Who plays Fraz.
Yeah.
He's not one of the featured people in the opening titles at this point. His name is there, but he becomes he gets moved up and he gets his face into it, and they change. How would you describe him? He's sort of a mixed race, sort of black chap, and they pull out what Intro to X fans would know as the pan pipes of xenophobia.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
They just give him the ethnic sound. Ethnic is that, you know, that keyboard patch that covers everyone who isn't white.
Yeah, well, the one is it the same one you get at the beginning of Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel?
Well, that is a more specific shakuhachi, yeah, it's... That's the fella. Lovely stuff. It's because the Core Game 1 had an expansion card that just said ethnic, and it was all little sort of marimba hits and bells and wooden sort of pan flutes, and that's all it was. And the card itself was like sort of brown and gold. It was... Even the design of the card was racist. It was funny. And so, yeah, that's you've got that joy to come and even the guitar sounds worse when they change it here. This is a real guitar, but for some reason it's played and recorded in such a way that it sounds like a synthesizer. Like, with a guitar sound on it. But it's actually a guitar. Never mind. We're into the episode, photo finish. You get the horrible yellow title again.
Yep.
For the last time, that's going to change now. Those weren't meant to be yellow. They were dropped in as video inserts and something went wrong and they went yellow. They're meant to be white, and from now on, they're going to be white. Another thing eagle-eyed people will have noticed, there's been no directorial credit on this or the previous episode. Because they were directed by someone called Colin Nutley, who wasn't happy with the final edit. None of the directors on Press Gang ever got final cut. Sandra Hasty, the producer, always had the final cut. And Colin Nutley wasn't happy with the final cut on either of these two episodes, so he left and had his name removed.
Right. But later directors are credited, is that right?
Absolutely. All of the other ones are, and prominently so. So you'll realise, it's where you look back and you realise you haven't seen a directorial credit here.
Right, because it didn't stand out to me, but I suppose if all the other ones have them, then yes, then it would kind of stick out.
We see Linda's swear box. This is... Stephen Moffat trying to bring realism in. He knows he can't have teenagers swearing on telly, but he knows that they do it all the time, so he has it happen off camera.
Yeah, I need to discuss the swear box. Are we eventually going to approach it?
We can do, but we can also discuss it now. It's going to come back. It's going to be mentioned again, but if you've got particular words about it, let's hear them.
Yeah, I do. So the way a swear, well, over here the concept is more of a swear jar than a swear box.
But
that's just, you know, nitpicking.
Pedantry,
yes, which I'm also good at. So over here, what I'm familiar with is the way it's supposed to work is if you actually swear, then you put money in. And what I was seeing Linda doing was resist the urge to swear, but pay anyway.
My idea is that Linda has been reading the proofs of things overnight, had a sworn then.
And has saved up the money and brought it in.
Yeah.
Yes. That I also figured. But at one point later, when she and Julie are out front of the city council building.
Sarah.
No, Sarah.
Sarah, sorry. She and Sarah outside the city council building. It looks like she has the urge to swear and doesn't, and then puts money in, or has she sworn off camera? But I've missed it.
I suppose so. At this point, it might be a joke that she just thinks, oh, may as well just put the money in.
And then not have
the effort of swearing. Perhaps it goes into petty cash. But anyway, I'm going to interrupt my synopsis and have you do yours.
You're interrupting yourself now, Chris.
All right. Is it a 60-second summary?
If you want, but I also need to find my stopwatch again that I downloaded.
I could time myself and not look.
Also true, but let's not do that as of yet.
I think I have one on my phone if...
nice.
Okay.
Right.
Yes.
Illyrio, instead, are you ready to summarize Photo Finish, the episode where not much happens?
I'm ready to summarize.
Try not to go ridiculously under. No, I'm turning into the other guy. Right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
And three, two, one, go.
Episode 2, Photo Finish, where no one actually takes a picture on screen. We are getting close to the first edition, and some stuff is going on where they're deciding to get more details about that main story, the grabber from the previous episode. Colin has a friend sneakily install a phone. How would they install a phone without anyone noticing? Because of all the trash everywhere, of course. That's how. And then you have elements like the czar of the pizza and the idea of not charging someone if they eat the whole pie. I wouldn't eat a pie there, would you? And you have the swear box, which I was confused on how it operated. And obviously, we have Spike and poetry. What? Could it be? And then he's very heteronormative and afraid of people thinking that he's all about ballet. And his friends are really quite interesting with that really long dangly earring. And of course, I could only end the summary with James Armstrong is the best.
1 minute.
Fantastic.
Yay!
That was suspiciously good,
I didn't time myself, I promise.
Okay, that's good then.
I think you covered the main points there, yeah.
Right, so I've got to get back into the swear box thing.
Yeah.
Right, well, be that as it may, we're live. Sorry, that was a joke for Joe.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
what I mean to say is, be that as it may, with the swear box, we continue to see the press gang the Junior Gazette, rather, operations board.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to mention that. I caught that, and I was like, oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, but it's got a note underneath that says, see me, Linda. So, yes, Linda enters, looking a bit like Darlene from Roseanne with that hair. Mm-hmm. Puts the money in the swear box. She's
There's
already courting
with
best
that.
Dress because she's half wearing the same outfit from last time.
I know.
Yeah, which, I'd say it's a strong
She's
look,
not
yeah.
my pick.
Yeah, I know, but we can discuss that nearer
We'll get
the time.
To that later.
She puts the money in the swear box, as previously discussed. Ask Kenny for an opinion on something. He says yes. Yes.
Yeah, you're right.
It's awesome.
Julie asks her opinion on her article, so more money goes in the swear box. It reminds
me. I like that gag a lot, actually. Like, awesome. What did you think of my, was it the makeup piece? And you go, oh, yeah, pops another coin in.
It needs work. It reminds her of some more swearing she did.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that reminds me when I swore about it last night.
Yeah. Illyrio, after your comment about Sarah's whining, I now can't just stop seeing her whining all the time.
She immediately
complains about water-based Tippex.
Oh, so Tippex is the brand name over there, or was?
Right, it is liquid paper, right? So I didn't know what the...
Invented by?
Mike Nesmith's mother?
Yes!
Yeah, oh yes, yes.
I fucking love you guys! Yes, Mike Nesmith's mother invented...
So he's sort of almost independently wealthy. Anyway,
yep.
He didn't need to be in the Monkees.
He didn't need to be in that fake musical group.
He wrote Listen to the Band, which is great.
That's awesome.
I wish I were independently wealthy so I could just hang around, be in a sort of fake
You want to be a monkey, Joe?
Yeah, pretty much.
That'd be awesome.
The only other independently wealthy person I can think of who didn't need to work but did it anyway. Joe, you may know who I'm going to mention here.
I've lost it.
It's Anthony Ainley, who was the master in the 80s.
Yes.
He didn't need to work, but he loved
That's
it.
That's awesome.
Fantastic. Right. Yeah.
Right. So Sarah, she's using the water-based Tippex. She has to attack it with a hairdryer to make it dry.
Hairdryer. Yes.
It's Which got she few, has in the office, obviously. Yeah.
It's got. Well, she brings it in, specially, obviously. She's got long hair at this point, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
Hair spoiler.
Ooh.
Never mind. And because of a few fumes, she'll live longer, but at this rate, she'll need to anyway. There's a lot of chat between Linda and Spike, but it just transpires that she wants him to go out and gather more disco info.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although he's alluding to... And sorry if I'm stepping on your toes.
No, step away.
He's alluding to inviting her out to see a musical group of some kind.
Oh, does come up later. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that later.
I
thought that was right now.
It happens soon, but we can do that.
Well, I'll just let you carry on then, and I'll wait till we get there.
All right, it's very adult.
How about we do that?
It's very grown-up writing. It's like, there's a new band coming to Sherrington.
Yeah.
It's like, do you want to be...
is the sort of thing that TV writers seem to do. It's like, yeah, there's this like hip new band that are playing at the disco, and everyone's going, like, yeah. It's kind of like an adult's idea of what kids get up to.
Yeah, it's the same thing with disco info. He just says, didn't they have a hit recently? And it's like, not quite as funny a joke as he wants it to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's a similar joke in Red Dwarf, and it's like, didn't they have a hit with Baby I Want Your Love thing? You're just a little bit more effort that works far better. Kenny's writing up someone else's Hill Walking article. If he have it done by tonight, it'd make Linda's evening. Spike says he could make Linda's evening, but she suggests that he give up. He's not her type, because her type is evolved. Linda goes into exposition mode, because this actually is part two of two, really.
Yeah.
It's reminding the audience that their lead story is basically just a rumour that the disco might be sold for a supermarket. Bear in mind, they don't even mention this, isn't a rumour, even a rumour they've uncovered. It was a rumour going round anyway, because Danny, the poor line-reading photographer, who is in this episode, and I've studiously ignored him. He features nowhere in my write-up.
According to my notes, I wrote, dialogue still snappy and good, Danny still shite. So I guess any lines that he does get, he doesn't deliver well, although I don't remember them.
He doesn't
enough
deliver
to say
them well.
What they are.
One of them is like, Linda, which does sound like he's about to do a rap about chlamydia, which if you haven't seen the Australian chlamydia rap on YouTube, I recommend intensely. It has what Joe has described as, do you mind if I ruin your...
No, go ahead.
As basically the opposite of hip-hop flow.
It's like, if anyone asks you what flow means in hip-hop, say, I don't... It's basically the exact opposite of this video.
So there you go. And that's full of high-rising terminals as well. It's great fun. So anyway, they've got the rumour the disco might be sold for a supermarket, and they've got a photograph of two shifty dudes outside with Jack Slade eyeing it up. So far, it's only good for front page gossip, but plenty of papers have done worse. More info would be nice, so she sends Spike to go and find it, which he will do if Linda goes to see a new band in Sherrington with him next week. And Illyrio, what were you going to say?
It went strangely into pouting.
Oh, the sulk.
The sulk. It was interesting. He sold that very well.
Oh, well,
it was very good. Very good sulking.
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves, because Linda, she has no wish to go all the way to Sherrington with Spike to see a bunch of deadheads drowning out their music with the noise it makes. And two, she's already going. Having run through every possible person Linda could be going with, it transpires, Judy reveals it's a chap called James Armstrong.
The James Armstrong?
The very same.
Who she describes as describes him as tall, blonde, and edible. Linda asks if Spike is satisfied. Judy confirms that she would be.
Yep.
I'm disappointed that Linda didn't go to the gig with her dog, which is an option that Spike suggested.
It is.
That would be fun, just take a dog to a concert.
Did you take a dog to Mastodon? I know you've got a dog and you went to Mastodon.
Mastodog. No, I didn't, unfortunately. I will also say that I want to steal the phrase drown out the music with the noise it's making for a music review, but I don't know of who yet, but I've got to keep that one on the back burner. Yeah.
Totally should. Yeah.
It's good. It's one of the good lines that Moffat hasn't recycled.
Yeah.
But yes, Spike goes into full-on sulk. Yeah. And he's got the sulk in that American accent as well.
Yes.
That he's still trying to sell. I've had a bit of a think about this accent, by the way, and I'm going to try and justify it.
Go on.
And it can be justified further with information you learn later on in the series, but I'm not going to fold that into this theory yet, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he's meant to be sort of 17, and he's lived full time in the UK for 4 years. So this is during this time, like, his voice is broken, and when you do that, you've got to kind of relearn how to speak anyway. So at this point, I think if he'd just let it take its course, he would sound more naturally English than he does. But as you know from the previous episode, he watches cop shows and stuff to top up his accent and things like that. So it's, regardless of where he's been born and how he spoke for most of his early life, he's kind of just permanently faking an accent, deliberately. Not so much so that he's fooled himself, and he only hears himself, so it's, you know, it's become normal to him.
I think I can get behind that.
Wicked.
I think I know what stuff you're talking about that you can fold into that, but obviously,
yeah,
shan't mention it here.
No, let's not do that.
Nice. Excellent use of the word shan't, Joe.
Oh, thank you.
He's a Victorian child.
Yes, yes, I am.
Shan't.
Oh, Papa.
Now let's just be happy in a corridor.
Oh, yes.
You heard Bleak Expectations, didn't you, Illyrio? Season 1, at least. Series 1.
Pardon me?
Did you hear Bleak Expectations, Series 1, the Dickensian radio comedy? I sent it to some people, and I can't remember if you were one of them.
I believe I was one of them, but I don't think I've listened.
Ah, well, you should. At this point in proceedings, by the way, it becomes clear that Julia Sawala's losing her voice during
four. Oh, yeah. I felt for her. Lots of empathy. I lost my voice a few weeks ago.
Mm.
Had to cancel a couple of teaching gigs and couldn't record commentaries. I had a little YouTube tutorial video I wanted to get done, and I couldn't do that. And now my voice is actually feeling like it's back. It's back. It's back.
Good,
and
good,
I don't
good.
Have that and, raspiness and that love, kind yeah. of, I don't want to. This morning I was making the kids breakfast and I started singing, and I think my voice is back because they were both very, very embarrassed.
That's a good measure.
It's a good reason to get your voice back. I want to embarrass my kids today.
I want to embarrass them.
I love you, baby. And if it's... Yeah. How about that? So I burst
You'd be
out
such a great embarrassing dad, Chris.
I would. It's not. Yeah. It's never going to happen. But hey, yeah. There you
embarrassing
go.
Embarrassing dad.
Pardon? Embarrassing dad.
Yeah, that could just be what I would sing.
Yeah.
Are you and then write it's kind of meta.
Write a whole embarrassing dad song.
Yeah.
And accompany yourself on the ukulele when you're out and about.
Or as my son calls it, the ukulele.
That's also good. Yes. He could make a range of really bad gender-reinforcing ukuleles called ukuleles. Yes,
the ukulele yeah. lady,
just, yeah. just sort of pink heart shapes and things.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying your son's a sexist, obviously.
No.
That's not the case. I apologise unreservedly.
It's all right. But his culture is, so...
Well, indeed.
But, well, yes.
But we're getting there.
We are.
So anyway, yeah, Sawala's voice is falling apart. And it's ages before they get some lines in the script to cover that. But, I mean, they do, but before that point happens,
which
you really notice it.
Which I did not expect, and I found very refreshing. Mm. Wow, that's kind of interesting that they're integrating it instead of just expecting us to pretend it's not going on.
They managed to work it into the swear box thing as well, mm-hmm, which I think is really nice. So it almost feels like it's kind of deliberate.
Oh, so yeah, her voice is going, but with the swear box, she can't afford it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, that makes sense. They always had Moffat on set. He was always about. Like during
filming. Did they want him there or did he just show up?
No, even he was.
Hi, guys. Why weren't you at the docks like you said you were going to be? I had to ask three production assistants where you were before someone would acquiesce.
I like that. Because like, if it were me, I would just go straight into that bad accent again.
Oh, you love that bad accent.
I do. Anyway, listen, let's get back to this thing. Spike is already pulling his almighty strop. He says, why don't she send Fraz? He said, you know, she likes Fraz, but he's not exactly God's gift to the human intellect. So Spike leaves. Kenny says, you know, you must fancy her rotten. And he says, I drink her bath water.
Yep.
Ew.
Which is weird.
Which is
Illyrio
weird, but it's
has,
not...
has word for word quoted my note on that line.
Yeah. Ew. It's not the first time I've heard that, though.
Yes, but people shouldn't say that.
People shouldn't say that. It's listen, it's bad enough when children drink their own bathwater.
Oh,
and as a father, The number of times I've had to say, don't drink the bathwater, is too many times.
You think more than one is probably too many.
More than zero is too many.
If you're interested in 3-for-3 opinion jamming, I've got in brackets after the nice phrase. It wasn't so, ew, yeah. But I've gone long form.
Drink her bathwater? Mm. No, you wouldn't, because then you would be violently ill. At least I hope you would, because I would hope that you would learn your lesson.
So she's got dysentery. Oh! Turns out Linda's got a bad sore throat because she drank Spike's bathwater earlier.
Oh. Hello!
And has caught some kind of throat infection. It's a
caught
weird
a bad American accent. Just like, oh no.
It's a weird.
Gee, what's happened here?
It's a weird thing for a teenage character to say, but it's an even weirder thing for a writer in his late 20s to write for a teenage character to say. That's strange.
Maybe it was a popular thing.
Sorry?
Maybe it was a popular saying in the 80s.
Maybe.
But I don't know.
All this time, Linda's been missing her ruler. She finds Sarah's got the ruler. She says, see where it says, see where it says ruler. That's who it belongs to.
That nice. Is the best.
But, it's a bit of a step up for Linda of being a bit more sort of dictatorial.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. We're still in the first scene. It's a bit like last week. Because at this point, the phone rings. Linda asks someone to get the phone, then remembers they don't have a phone.
Exactly.
So, talk about a wrong number. alright, it's Danny, but I didn't want to say it was Danny. Danny finds the extension lead, he traces it to a red BT handset in a drawer. Linda answers the phone, and we hard cut to Spike going to Zar's Cafe, which Joe is in reality just down the road from North Alt Station.
Oh yes.
It's not far from here at all. And he meets the guy who runs the place, who claims to be the rightful czar of all Russia, who's reduced to running a cafe as he's between reigns. At which point he says, do you want a pie? Which is a fantastic bit of delivery. To hammer home further that he's the rightful czar of all Russia, he's got a waitress called Anastasia, and he'll serve you a winter palace, which is a Coke with ice in it. The Coke always had ice in it. But now you've got to pay for it.
I mean, I've been in a few greasy spoons in my life. It's Illyrio, is that a phrase that...
it's a phrase here, yeah. It's definitely a phrase here. I have two favorite greasy spoons here in this town, and they are fantastic and awful simultaneously.
I've never seen a spoon as greasy as this one here.
Yeah.
I'm a teeny bit older than Joe, and I do remember cafes that would just look like this, particularly sort of transport cafes. They would just have truckers come in and pull up, which is the actual place. The actual place they use as Tsar's exterior is like that, because it's on a road that leads to motorways. So truckers pull in there, and they just want egg and chips and a cup of tea in a slightly murky cup, and they'll move on again. So Tsar's the interior, which I'm fairly sure is a set, but I don't know. I think maybe this might be the real place, and then they build a set of it later. But anyway, it looks horrible. And to do some more hammering of points home, it's so horrible that allegedly the Tsar offers a discount to anyone who can finish one of his pies, but so far has never had to actually pay up. So given all this, Spike goes on the side of caution, gets a coffee. I'm jigging about a bit here because they cut between scenes and it's just easier not to. So Spike finds Fraz is already at Tsar's. I said SARS. It's a place that's so dirty it looks like you would catch SARS. There you say. That's what I said before we started recording, and I liked it so much I wanted to fold it into the podcast.
I know, it's a good joke. Moffat recycles his lines. So should you.
That's true. Wait till you see a little girl in an astronaut costume.
Oh yes.
Because that's going to happen.
I can't wait.
Wicked. Fraz thinks he's on an important mission for Linda. He's been sent out with a notepad, but Spike, you know, he thinks they're both just sort of drongos that everyone wants to get rid of. So, you know, they've clearly just been sent out on a fool's errand to get them out from underfoot. But I think Fraz thinks he's genuinely on the case, and he asked for Spike to be sent along, even though, and he quotes, Spikey's not exactly God's gift to the human intellect.
Mm-hmm.
So now you wonder whether Linda has stolen that line from Fraz or the other way around. It's not a very Fraz line, but
no.
He delivers it with great authority. And what I'm already getting from rewatching this is I'm really enjoying Maloki Christie.
Yeah. I remember increasingly enjoying Fraz as the series went on.
Yeah, I've never really paid much attention to him before, but he's really doing the business for me at the moment with his comic timing. I don't know about you.
It's very good. I'm enjoying their time together on screen quite a lot.
It was the way he delivered the horoscope, astrology line last week. Good stuff. And the spots.
Oh, yes. I was going to say, for my money, he sounds like somebody who's heard this phrase, really likes the sound of it, and then is saying it, is repeating it in a confident way to kind of pretend like it's his own. That would be my reading.
That sounds good, Fraz, sort of Fraz parrot fashion.
Yeah.
Right, anyway, we cut back to Linda, who's clearly been using some foul language while the camera's been off her, because she immediately feeds the swear box and goes back to the phone conversation. Turns out, on the other end of the line, it's Colin.
Colin!
Colin is in a phone box. He claims to be calling from just over the road, but I can tell you he's calling from far nearer than that, because if you look at that closely, that is a very accurate phone box prop that has been put outside the Junior Gazette building. You can see recognisable buildings in the background, and you can see the windows of the Junior Gazette building reflected in the phone box.
No, wow. I was going to say, I don't know how Linda manages to hear him over that shirt he's wearing.
Yes. I think it was in the same shirt as last week, but he had a pastel, more sort of creamy jacket on last time. And yeah, it's a dark jacket. It takes the edge off. But also, it doesn't work. I think if you're going to wear a shirt that loud, you have to wear a cream jacket. Otherwise, it doesn't work, which may give you some hint as where I'm going later.
Indeed.
With my vote. But anyway, she's annoyed because he's put in a phone that they can't afford. He explains that they're not affording it. He's got a cousin who's a British telecom engineer and has put it in on the main Gazette switchboard. Which, the way he describes it, that sounds impressive. But what all he's actually done is run a series of extension leads, and this will become increasingly obvious, out of a Gazette window, across the entrance road to get into the place in the first place, and in through the Gazette building window at the side. It's immediately obvious. Linda refers to it later as looking like an electric washing line. Which is good to tell you, but it's far from stealthy. Oh, dear. How's it hitting you guys so far?
I'm enjoying Colin being up to something.
Yeah.
His angle for me wasn't clear. I think we're going to get to a moment later where the angle for me, I think, is going to be super clear. I'll wait for that. I'm very, very suspicious.
Well, you may have an ulterior motive for getting the phone installed. Mm-hmm. You mean? Joe, I know what you think of the series, so...
Yeah. That's all right.
Let's move on. A bit more sedate than last week, but remember last week was just a breathless introduction to people. It was a ridiculous whirlwind of activity. But anyway, Spike and Fraz have decided to go off and hunt their story. Spike opines they've been swept under the rug by total wimps, guys who look like they're wearing glasses even when their glasses are off.
That's a good line, I like that.
So,
there's a similar line in The Simpsons about something about children, kids who wear mittens on their coat all year round or something like that.
Aww.
I think that's the remedial class that Bart finds himself in wherever that place where Hank Scorpio is. You know the one I mean.
I know what you mean. I can't remember the name either.
There's also, and I think we'll amuse Illyrio, a child in there who is in there because he moved there from Canada and they think he's slow, eh?
Yeah.
But he's like Canadian Ralph Wiggum, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, dear. Sorry about that. where did I get? Oh, yeah. Though, so Spike's doing this because he assumes Linda thinks they can't do it, which is why he's going to. Like, Fraz is like, isn't that what she wants us to do? But like, no, we're doing this because... So, essentially, if Linda isn't crafting a devious plan, which actually it looks like she isn't, then she's going to basically be able to learn from this how easy it is to craft a devious plan and get people to do what you want.
Exactly.
which is not going to be very helpful. Here they meet a couple of their delinquent mates, and I have to refer to the original series concept here, which is that, do you remember I spoke of the two gangs, the Nukes and the Saints,
yes.
the newcomers
yeah.
and settlers? Fraz and Spike were the leaders of these respective gangs.
And wow. Wait, which was which?
I couldn't tell you. I'm guessing Spike is a Nuke.
Although he has been there 4 years, but yeah.
It's true, but it's new enough.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot more of a sense of sort of, what's the word, teenage despondency and delinquency and vandalism and things like that. More just this sense of this, you know, disaffected generation, which has kind of been lost a bit in the ongoing narrative. And so you don't have to have this thing where these two sort of former rival gang leaders have to work together. But the idea of their old sort of gang mates coming is... You can see how that would work, but even it feels a bit weird here. And Spike's like, you know, threatening to punch one of them and stuff like that. It doesn't work with the character as he is now, even if it worked before. You know?
Hmm.
They've heard this stupid rumour that he's working on the kids' newspaper, which Fraz immediately confirms.
Yeah, like immediately.
Nice
and then they
Fraz.
Continue questioning, as if he didn't say anything.
He actually really isn't God's gift to the human intellect.
No, he's not.
So yeah, so Spike tries to big himself up, goes a bit postury, but you know, if he's going to take them both on, then he must think he's Rambo, Superman, or James Armstrong.
Yep. This is ridiculously amazing.
Yeah, are you still into it?
I am so into this whole James Armstrong thing. I can't tell you how the idea of name dropping and then again and then, oh my god, that picture.
Well, yes, but
I love the fact that I've written in my notes that the specter of James Armstrong hanging over the. This episode.
Yeah, and he's a character... Yeah. This is no spoiler alert. He's a character you will never see. You will never meet James Armstrong.
I'm so happy.
He exists solely as a joke.
I am so happy to hear this. I know that that's kind of officially a spoiler, but I'm so happy because that was my thought.
Yeah, he will...
And I was thinking, I hope we never, ever, ever, ever meet him, and I'm so pleased.
He will be mentioned again, though. You wait for
of
that
course.
Right.
He's the greatest.
Spike shows his great talent for investigative journalism because he collars the guy who runs an existing supermarket. He makes the manager out the back and strikes up a conversation by talking about the exciting supermarket managerial life and how he might want to go into it himself later. You know, and what do you know about the new supermarket that's opening over the way? And the guy's like, though I heard those plans were scrapped. This is an outrage. He's like, can we quote you on that? And, the notepad comes out. And
the notepad comes out.
And so they start being able to get a story. They going for a quote.
If I were a middle-aged man leaving the goods-only entrance...
And a couple of teenagers.
Which, by the way, had me super confused because I've never seen that phrasing before.
Ah, right. No, it's just, yeah, it's just the loading.
Goods entrance. I'm like, do they mean that's the good entrance? What?
Oh, it's the best entrance.
The best entrance. Hi-o. And
I assume you get what it means without me explaining,
yeah.
though, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and two teenagers were there and started chatting me up about something clearly that they weren't really interested in. I'd be looking around for their little gang buddies and worried for my wallet.
Yeah, you'd be looking for the, like the raptors. In a
yeah.
Jurassic Park, you'd be looking for the other ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Clever boys, yeah.
Or just trying to get in your car, driving away.
I would get in my car and drive away.
Or go back through the goods entrance. They can't follow you because they're bads.
Because they're bad. Also, I initially was like, oh man, they're blocking his door. And I'm like, no, dummy.
No,
they drive on the opposite side.
His door's over the other side.
His door is perfectly accessible.
Which is convenient, you see?
If
you were in the US, he'd be stuck. Or in Canada, or in many other places around the world, in fact. In fact, most of the places where they're driving. I have no idea why we do that over that way. That's one place where I'm just going to go, nope, we're kind of in the minority on that one.
Yeah, but there's no obvious either the right way to do it. It just seems to be an odd consensus that most people go right and we go left.
Yeah, it's strange, but there you go.
Us unlike Hong Kong and some other places, yeah.
Yeah, Australia.
I believe.
Yeah.
Australia, usually places surrounded by water.
Mm.
So you don't have an this kind of awkward place where we all switch sides.
No, crumbs.
Yeah.
No, let's not get into that.
The logistics of which are fascinating to me.
We're back at the office and we've got to hide the phone because Chris is coming. Chris is coming to talk a bit more about the print run. And Chrissy is looking good, by the way.
Yes,
she's
agreed.
Looking great. Now she's got a pastel jersey and she's got shoulder pads, admittedly, but it is 1989 or 1988 at the time of filming.
I think she can rock them as well, you know.
Yep. She works well with her hair and she's got the earrings. And this may also tell you where I'm going. The phone rings, she doesn't react, but everyone starts going ultra shifty. And she was like, why is everyone so weird about the fact you've had a phone put in? Oh, I see. You haven't had a phone put in.
We've had a phone put in.
Yeah, do we know about it? No.
No.
And Joe, you know how much we like this line about why she's not going to tell Matt Kerr.
Yes, because she doesn't want to be there when he finds out.
Yeah, and that's the only way he's going to find out, but she won't tell him because she doesn't want to be there. Love that line. Love it, love it, love it. Linda starts to rip Colin a new one after Chris is gone, but she doesn't have time. She's got to go to the town hall to pick up the disco info. But before leave...
Aha! Thank you.
The phone rings again and Linda takes another call. Mysteriously for Colin Matthews Enterprises.
Colin is setting up a base of operations. Question mark is what I wrote down. I think Colin is going to try and somehow squat in that place in off hours, during off hours, if such a thing is possible, at a Junior Gazette, and maybe run a business out of there. That's what I'm thinking.
If it helps, the place doesn't really have hours. If you've got the keys, you can just get in there.
Yeah. So I'm thinking he's setting up a base of operations. That's his phone right there.
Yeah. So he, do you reckon he's just sort of posited it as a kind, as you know, as a thing that will help out, because they haven't publicized a number for the phone.
No.
You know, for the paper, because they don't know they've got a phone. So all the calls they've got must have been for Colin Matthews Enterprises. So far. Yeah,
and this brings up something. Shouldn't they have a phone number?
What?
How do you mean?
Shouldn't the Junior Gazette have a phone?
They probably should have done, but they probably didn't. I don't think the idea was that anyone would call them to get... I think the idea is to inspire the kids to get out there and do some on-the-foot reporting.
Yeah. And I was just wondering about, you know, people contacting them somehow, or getting back in touch with them or something.
It'd have been a fairly big expense at the time, weirdly, to have it put in and to pay for it.
That's the impression I get from the episode.
And also to trust teenagers not to be on the phone all the time and run you up a huge bill, because...
Which you can't not do. My brother once got in a lot of trouble for having like a £100 phone call with his girlfriend at the time, so...
Yeah.
And because of that, our home phone, our landline back at home was blocked from calling mobile numbers, which was really annoying. So I was not happy with him for that.
Screw you, Will.
Yeah. Ooh.
Right, anyway, we're back to Spike. He's armed with the information the supermarket plans have been scrapped, and he goes to his inside source, which is a girl he once dumped who said he was going to she was going to kill him, but her dad works on the council. Meanwhile, Sarah and Squeaky Linda... I've written her as Squeaky Linda, and I can't help just thinking of it that way. Approach the town hall. Here's where the swear box comment happens. The voice is going, but, you know, she can't afford it.
Yeah.
Spike's...
Yeah, again, I was slightly confused again, but it really did work very well there with her voice issues.
Yeah. We've got to Spike, who's phoned his old girlfriend. She's found someone new, or at least someone new to hang around outside the house of. And spy on. That's weird. The new guy is taller. The new guy's better looking. The new guy's top.
Of course he is.
The new guy is top of all his classes. The new guy is James Armstrong.
James Armstrong.
Of course.
Meanwhile, Spike asks to speak to her dad. Sarah and Linda are immediately booted out of the town hall, not being able to speak to the person they wanted to see at all. Meanwhile, Bambi and Thumper arrive.
Oh.
The Three Stooges. Indeed. There's only two of them, but do you think they know that? Linda is absolutely dismayed at how much information these two have put together, which reveals that she didn't have a master plan at all. She actually was just trying to get them out from under her hair.
Yeah, and assumed that they would just dick off.
Yeah, and yeah,
like, I suppose.
Yeah, and whereas actually they've done a damn good job so far. But the problem is that her name's Amanda Swanson, the person they need to speak to. She's not going to see them because she wouldn't speak to these two. Not that Linda can speak, you know.
Yeah.
Spike thinks he'll get in because he's much prettier than Linda, a statement which is 100% incorrect.
And there we have, yes, and there we have some ADR.
Oh, do we? I didn't hear.
Yes. And I think it's because, see, and it was quite clear to me that that they went back and re-recorded the line. I think what he originally may have said was, "I'm the pretty one."
Ah.
And they redid that to, "I'm prettier than you."
Oh, I didn't notice that at all.
But I haven't had a chance to really try to lip read that.
I might go back and check that. Yeah.
I'm going to say this, when there is ADR in Press Gang, you can usually spot it a mile off.
Yes, which is what I noticed, but I was listening with headphones on.
I'm going to say this. In, I think, two episodes' time, you're going to have a character who, for some reason, seems to have been completely redubbed.
Wow.
And you could tell. But wow. It's very funny.
Maybe they had an accent.
Maybe, or maybe they didn't have enough of an accent.
Maybe they got annoyed with the bad line readings. They're like, okay, you're not going to Danny this situation up.
Maybe.
Don't you Danny this up.
So, I was going to say more about that, but obviously I'll talk more about that at the time.
At the time.
So, Sarah and Linda disappear. Spike wonders how they're going to get in, and then he remembers that Fraz's uncle owns a joke shop that does novelty costume hire.
That seems like an interesting place.
This is, by the way, Spike, who is undeterred by a newspaper clipping outside the town hall naming James Armstrong as Young Person of the Year.
Young Person of the Year. Why isn't he working at the Junior Gazette? This is my question.
Perhaps he's too old, or
perhaps he's working at the regular Gazette.
He's at the maths college, is that right? They're studying maths at the college?
Oh, he's certainly a maths student.
Maths student.
He might be... It might be like a sixth form college. It's not clear.
Yeah, okay. It could be. But I like the idea that he's some kind of wunderkind and he works at the proper Gazette in his spare time.
Ooh, that's how he and Linda met. That moment that she kind of just snuck in to stick her head up and talk to Mr. Vader.
She briefly met him in the newsroom.
I might have to write this spin-off about James Armstrong.
Ooh,
international James man Armstrong. Of history.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Wicked.
You know what? I bet you we can get Moffat to write it.
Yeah, when he's off of Doctor Who.
Exactly.
It's go back and redo Press Gang, yeah.
I think Moffat should not write anything for more than, say, 2 or 3 years, but we'll see that. Come to that.
Interesting.
No. That's not a spoiler for the quality of the rest of Press Gang. Don't get me wrong. But anyway, we cut to Amanda Swanson's office. Amanda Swanson is sort of town planner, councilwoman. A Viking enters. an American Viking with sunglasses. He asks for a place to park his axe.
Yep.
He's a singing telegram, except he's not. He's lying. He's from the Junior Gazette. And he feels he deserves an interview simply for the effort he went through to get up there. Which is, it sounds like Spike utilising pretty much the same techniques he'd use to chat up girls.
Yep. Agreed.
Do something ridiculously unwarranted and unfounded that no one's asked for, and then claim that that's a reason why you should get preferential treatment.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, it was the late 80s, early 90s.
Yes.
And therefore, you would not be arrested for walking into an office building wielding an axe.
Even a plastic axe.
Yes. Was it plastic?
I think so.
I don't think it was a real one. So.
It looked like a real one to me, but hopefully it was plastic.
Well, you know, you can be shot for having plastic things.
This is true. These days.
I know US police shootings are quite famous. A couple of years ago, we had a guy shot who was carrying a table leg.
Table leg, yeah. I remember that.
And we had some riots as a result of that, instead of just a load of people going, oh, forget about it. You know, it's part of the thing. It just happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. We had some outrage because we don't have police shootings very often because, you know, our police don't have guns.
One of them happened, one famous police shooting happened near to where I live now. Probably one of the other more famous ones.
Jean-Charles Dumenez's down.
That's correct, yeah.
Down the road.
Mural of him, at my local tube stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we're getting serious.
Oh no, wait.
Back
to the Viking.
I'm going to talk about Amanda Swanson.
Amanda Swanson, for some reason she kind of looks familiar, but she might just kind of resemble most kind of bland characters.
Oh, she's been in some stuff. She's a Scottish actress. She's called Sandra Vaux.
Okay.
She was born in the Shetland Isles. She was in Vera Drake. She's in Breaking the Waves. She was in, Joe, you'll like this, she was in a series called 11th Hour.
Oh, fantastic.
And that's that sort of X-Files-y type British series from 2006 with Patrick Stewart in as a Home Office scientist who investigates weird shit.
I have no memory of that series.
It's quite good. And her daughter is Candida Doyle, who plays keyboards for Pulp.
Wow, that is a good factoid.
But the character herself, Amanda Swanson, originally a much bigger... From the initial treatment of the show, she's a councilwoman. She was much bigger. You know, the whole sort of city versus countryside debate that was going to be a big thing about Norbridge, like the encroaching suburbs.
She was going to be part of that then.
Yeah, her place on the council, she was going to disapprove of city-bred interlopers and any kind of change to Norbridge, which would explain why she would oppose another supermarket, for instance.
Yeah.
Initially in Press Gang, there was no... We've seen Sullivan. He wasn't there. That authority figure didn't exist. The authority figures were Matt Kerr, a police inspector called Hawkins, who, as far as I know, we never see at all, and Swanson herself, who's going to be a long-running antagonist and adversary. And you can see how they would set that up, you know, with the apology, you know, I intend to read an apology in your next issue, if there happens to be one. But...
Yeah, she was wielding some power. I mean, we're not quite there yet, but she was definitely wielding some power, and I thought that was a little bit weird. I mean, you're just on the city council, really? You're going to...
That's what council workers can be like, really.
Interesting.
Anyway, spoiler alert, we never see her again.
Yay!
But is it too much of a spoiler to say that this is not the last ridiculous costume you'll see in
I don't think that's too much of a spoiler. It's a bit of
one. No, but you're making my day, Joe. You're making my day.
Wicked. So, wow, we are all over the place. We're back to the newsroom now. Sometime later, because Linda and Fraz are back, Spike said he was going to, you know, go out and get something to eat, and then he would bring the interview to Linda later, because he gets his interview, because he's a charming bastard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Linda has a bit of a meeting about the cover story. Oh no, I've mentioned Danny again. I'd just forgotten that I'd mentioned him, because he's so immemorable. Is that a word? It is now. Unmemorable.
Yeah.
It's probably unmemorable.
Damn it. I'd forgotten that.
Hey.
Danny reminds them they don't really have a story. They've just got that rumour. Yeah. They've got a photograph. Kenny says they aren't really saying anything anyway, but Linda says it's great because it allows the reader to jump to their own conclusions.
I was really surprised that Linda was... It seems like a really half-assed way to put together your grabber of a story. I don't know.
She's still very inexperienced. Like, right at the start, when she sends Spike off, you know, what makes you think I can do it? And she does say, look, we're all new to this.
This is true.
But, yeah, it is a bit tabloidy. It seems like a thing she's settling for because there really is nothing else.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, yes, they didn't go for the Star Wars story then.
No, that's a real shame. Because that was a shocker. It was a national scandal.
Yeah, indeed.
Fraz drops by. He mentions he's finally got all 12 star signs, except for hemoglobin, tarmac, zinc,
carbohydrate.
I have to call shenanigans. This is mean. It's gone from being kind of, oh, look, he doesn't know, to, you know, and and Linda even says that, you know, we shouldn't have done that or said that. And it was, this is one thing I'm a little wary of. I'm worried that this KD versus evolved.
I see what you mean. Yeah,
is kind of going somewhere. I don't like where it's going. Kind of. Hopefully, it'll die down a little bit more. Maybe it's just because it's still introductory and they want it to establish this kind of tension or friction. But I don't like Linda being mean.
Yeah, I didn't think of it like that, and I think I don't think the series does go on in that vein, which is probably why I didn't think of it that way. So I think you'll be pleased with it. It is an odd, rare moment of Linda having an uncomplicated laugh with some friends. She's normally very, very serious.
Yeah, but a laugh at someone's expense as well, which is I think slightly unusual for her too.
That is also true. But anyway, she learns from Fraz that Spike actually got the Swanson interview because they thought it'd be great if they got it and run it. So she finds that he's hanging out with his old tosser mates at Zars, having a laugh. And she goes into full-on embarrassing mode, pretending to be his girlfriend in a way he really is not happy with.
So we were talking about embarrassing dads earlier. I mean, Illyria, you can learn a thing or two here.
I know. It was quite, you know, he was definitely easy to embarrass.
Yes,
I'd say. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised with how heavily she poured it on. It was also unrelenting, which I think made it very successful embarrassment.
I like her level of detail because she's actually written a poem.
I'm not afraid to use this.
Yeah, specifically to blackmail him with, or to, you know, fake blackmail him with, I guess.
But, so yeah, and she does it neatly. Like, she claims that he's great at ballet and he writes poems, and when he's denying it, she's like, oh, you'll be denying you work for the Junior Gazette next. He's like, they know that, yeah, but you denied it to start with. And yep. It's just such great detail. Anyway, he hands in the Swanson interview. He says, look, all she did was deny it. They say, look, we can use an official denial. He says, so can I right now. Mm-hmm. But they go to press, finally. The thing comes out and the shit hits the fan instantly.
All right, yeah. All right, okay. This is the point at which I am so confused.
Right.
I was not ready for the Gazette's first issue to come out. I thought it was a dream sequence.
Yes.
I thought it was, they made the decision to go with it. Linda got in trouble and she would snap out of this daydream and we'd realize that she would do some more fastidious due diligence type of work and they'd fix things. And no, they actually, from my point of view, unceremoniously published their first issue.
Yep, they just leapfrogged 3 days and out it is.
That was very unexpected.
Yeah, given that they only cover 2 days between episode one and two,
yeah,
and then they suddenly jump forward another three.
It was kind of like, you know, it's going along at a certain pace, and then it's almost like all of a sudden someone has a doctor's appointment or something, and then they just rush through the ending.
Lovely.
Very funny.
I tell you what was weird for me is seeing it on actual newsstands, because I actually slightly forgot that it was an offshoot of the main paper until I went back and watched it again, because you do associate it with the school.
Mm.
But yeah, like seeing it on, like, next to the regular Gazette on, as I say, actual newsstands was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all gone tits up because they publish the story as though it's, you know, as though it's a definite thing that the council have arranged to sell this supermarket.
By the way, masterful headline.
Casing the joint.
Masterful.
Because it's the joint and two guys are casing the joint. It's it is brilliant. And so, but anyway, Linda has to go and see Amanda Swanson, who's super pissed off this time. You know, she expects an apology and said, look, you know, it's just a speculation. We didn't say it was going to happen. We'll apologize, you know, we'll apologize for any error, should there be one. You say, well, I look forward to reading it in your next issue, should there be one.
It's a pretty sick burn here. Yeah.
That was a burn, but I was so on Linda's side when she said that. There was no mistake.
No, exactly. It is just a, you know, it's a supposition, but they're kids, so people think they can lean on. A, they think they're getting a bit above their station by publishing a story like this anyway. They think they can lean on them and threaten them and get them to change it. They've offended every shopkeeper and council member in town. Kerr's under pressure to close the paper after one issue. Linda's so annoyed she can do a Rubik's Cube in 11 seconds.
That was fantastic.
And there's an odd bit of script where Fraz goes, if those two guys weren't buying, what were they doing?
Yeah.
But it's almost pointless him noticing that because they don't do any investigation on that. Because another person who's looked at that picture and wondered what they were doing are the police. Yep. They will recognize the two guys as professional arsonists. They've seen them.
I was just going to say yes if you make it look like an electrical thing.
Very good.
Which refers to an episode of Futurama we watched last night, Godfellas.
We did. And so yeah, they've recognized the guys as like arsonists for hire. So they've gone on a nab, and as a result, they love the Junior Gazette because of this picture. It's actually Danny who saved the day.
Yes.
Oh, God damn it.
Hooray. And you know...
He's actually useful, yeah.
Weirdly, last week, Illyria, you claimed that you guessed that photo finish was that Danny was going to take a photograph that causes someone's career to be finished.
I suppose that this is accurate, yeah.
Yes,
I guess Mr. Slade, is it John Slade?
Jack Slade.
Wow. was basically right.
It may certainly have a knock-on effect of him.
You know, not if his name was Jacques.
Jacques Slade.
Yeah, but people might call him Jack. That's the thing you can call people who are called John. I'm sticking by my era. Yes, this is true.
Which, as a young person, watching lots of adult-oriented television where people were still referencing Kennedy because certain people of a certain generation love doing that, I had no idea who John Kennedy was and why he was never in the same room with Jack Kennedy.
Jacques. I like John Egg or Jacques Oeuf.
Yeah, but I was going to say, I guess John Slade's career is pretty much finished. If he's been hiring arsonists,
well, if they can make it stick, but the arsonists certainly won't get a gig out of this one. So it's kind of put a crimp in their day at the very least.
Yeah.
Again, all of this is happening so quickly.
Yeah.
To the point where it literally feels like all of a sudden someone had to go to the doctors.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That there was this. Oh, this is really great. This is really great. And then maybe he realized, oh wait, I have to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Because the wrap-up comes so abruptly, and then other things happen so abruptly, and we're not actually they're not explained to us until after we see certain scenes.
Yeah.
I don't know why those two guys are sitting in the back of a police car until Linda comes out of the police station.
Yeah, I agree. But anyway, she goes on about how they've now got friends in the police force. They'll never let them forget it. Kenny and Linda get excited and go off to the newsroom. Spike's dodgy mates come by, say they're going down the park.
Yeah.
And off, you know, ask if he wants to come. He says, no, I'm sorry, I'm late for my dance class. And then leaps 15 fucking feet in the air.
Yep.
He gets such ridiculous air, it's unbelievable. He's like one of the Usos.
Hey, I like it. I love that freeze frame ending as well.
It's that freeze frame is awesome.
Classic kind of 80s TV.
It's a photo finish.
It's a photo finish.
Yeah. And we're done. That's the episode.
And we're done.
All right.
I quite like it, but it is not as good as I remember, and the pacing is fucked. 3 out of 5.
I was going to say
hey, hold on.
Yeah.
I think I've written something down.
Yes.
where is it? It says here, too quick an ending for me.
Yeah.
3 out of 5.
Yeah, just part 2 to last week. 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, I never thought I'd go to a 3 as quickly as this, but I do, sadly.
Also, you want to hold off in case, because there'll be better episodes later.
So. Well, of course, yeah. Yeah, don't worry, I've got my 5s all planned out.
Yeah.
And while we're here, we have got Best Dressed, Worst Dressed, as sponsored by RamjackPodcast.com. I'll leave a gap there for the sting.
Yep.
For sting, sorry.
Not that sting. Yes. Let's get off of wrestling, please.
Okay.
Aww.
Maybe when we've got more time.
Yeah.
Maybe when we have more time and we can discuss the baseball bat wielding and non-baseball bat wielding versions of Sting.
Wow.
Best dressed. I'm going to go out on a limb here and I'm going to give it to Spike in the Viking outfit.
Oh wow, that's amazing! It takes confidence.
It takes it's confidence. True. He wore it very well.
Because I thought you were talking about his normal stuff. That coat with the plane on the back. That was widely available in this country at the time. It was, mm-hmm. It was like available just from a big department store like C&A or something like that.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's given this sort of American individual look.
Yeah.
But out of all of the clothes in the series, it's the bit of clothing I know I saw in real life a lot.
A lot.
It's a Dakota written on the back and things like that. I saw every fucker with that coat. So it never strikes me as good. Viking outfit, though, I don't see that often, and that's a good call.
I know, everyone was around them when I was young. Well, who's your worst dressed, Deliria?
Worst dressed is Colin.
Worst dressed is Colin is also my worst dressed because Matt Kerr, we don't see his shoe, his boots.
Matt Kerr's at a desk the whole time. He's learned. Mm-hmm. He's learned his lesson. He's learned the first rule of not being seen, not to stand up.
Yeah.
Colin, the loud shirt, I think it's the same loud shirt as last week, but some reason about wearing a bigger, darker jacket with it makes it seem worse. Than the crown jacket. It's with the best dressed. I'm loath to go with Linda again for what's essentially a variant of the previous winning outfit.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's going to come back. And I also don't want to vote her in as a winner each week because I first saw this when I was like 12 and thought she was absolutely the best thing I'd ever seen. You know? So, I as you may have guessed, I'm going with Chrissy Stewart. She's got the slightly long jacket, the sleeve turn up, so the pastel top. Ah, she's great. She looks amazing.
I wasn't on last week, obviously, and I don't know when I'll be back again. So I will get my Linda vote.
That's
great.
That's fair enough. You're perfect. You can do that, you see.
Excellent.
Right.
Excellent indeed.
I think we are done, apart from, you're going to predict next week, Illyrio. Are you ready?
Yes.
Right, the title is One Easy Lesson.
Ooh. Linda and Spike go on assignment together, and they learn something about each other. That's my prediction.
Wow.
All right.
It seems subtle, but, you could do a lot with that premise.
Indeed, mm-hmm. Yeah.
They learn he's actually a Viking.
What?
She actually is a dragon.
Yeah.
Oh my god, they're a match made in, DreamWorks Animation Heaven.
He drags his knuckles up and down her body.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
So are we bereft of feedback today?
We have no feedback.
Awesome.
Which is a shame, but it does speed the process up.
Yeah, it does speed the process up quite a bit.
No, it doesn't get in the way of anything.
I was completely wrong. We did have feedback in the form of some emails. And here to read them out is the gorgeous Illyrio.
Robin says, "Hey there, guys. Okay then, press gang it is, dropping the out of respect for the band the. Robin, excellent reference. Awesome. I'm up late watching Photo Finish in order to make your early edition. Pretty good episode, though not as jam-packed with the yuck-yucks as the last one. I expected some mild swears to come out of Julia since she was feeding that bucket so much change. You see, in America, we feed the swear jar after we swear, not instead of swearing. You Brits are so repressed." And by Julia, I'm assuming you mean Linda, Robert, but I digress. "The mystery phone subplot gave us some more insight into the character of Colin and his mad swinging bangs. But where will this all lead? Is that phone a direct line to Commissioner Gordon? Will the kids get their own extension? Will one of Colin's bangs accidentally take out one of his eyes? Guess we'll find out in a later episode. Technology could really help this gang. They need some Apple II computers and maybe some Zach Morris phones to help keep the Junior Gazette going. Also, a good recycling bucket could do the world some good with all the sheets of paper being tossed about in there. So what's the deal with Julia's voice this week? And can I get a copy of her cover of Betty Davis Eyes? Oh, Dexter Fletcher, you are just skating by on charm alone. Because the accent and acting are not helping. Luckily, I like Spike despite the fact that Angel has better hair. But seriously, folks, I think I may already be shipping Spulia. Oh, it's unfortunate because her name is Linda. It's really unfortunate. Anyway, she's definitely out of his league, but I like the banter. It's like Maddie and David, the teenage years. I'll give this one 3 out of 5. This show needs a new theme song by Al Jarreau. Love the podcast. Love the show. Keep them coming. Czar Robin." Thank you, Robin. And we have some feedback from Matt. "Howdy, knuckle-draggers. You get text feedback this time. Like Linda, I'm losing my voice. However, unlike Linda, who probably lost her voice swearing at the peons who work at her kitty paper, I lost my voice due to illness. Here are some notes I took while watching episode 2 of Press Gang. Number 1. When Paul Reynolds turns around during the credits, he has Bobby Briggs' face." That's true, he does have Bobby Briggs' face. Okay. Number 2. "It was awfully presumptuous of Spike to assume Linda didn't have a date for that concert, just because Linda can be bossy and prim and a bit of a bore. Number 3. Oh yeah, Linda's a fox. If the IMDb is to be believed, Julia Sawala was 21 years old at the time of filming Press Gang, so it won't be too disturbing if I say Linda can annotate in my margins anytime." Oh, that's very, very, I think that might be a popular opinion. Number 4. "Why is such a big deal the kids have a phone? A newspaper ought to have its own phone, even a pretend newspaper like Linda's. Number 5, when Spike had his brainstorm after seeing James Armstrong's photograph in the Young Person of the Year article, I thought he was going to dress as James Armstrong, not a Viking. So that did not go as I expected. I want an episode where Linda defames her school in print based on the word of an inside source. Later, she refuses to identify that source when pressured, so the adults penalize her by sending her to Press Gang jail, i.e. detention. Spike becomes editor-in-chief in her stead and publishes an article condemning the school. The students revolt and rally outside the school and chant, 'Free Linda! Free Linda!' Matt Kerr commends Linda on her journalistic ethics, but asks her if she's sure this one story is worth all the fuss. When there are so many stories to tell. Quote, 'Is this the hill you want to die on, Linda?' Unquote. I have to do what I think is right. I believe in the power of the press. Who taught you such rot? You did, Mr. Kerr. I wasn't certain you were listening. Every word, Mr. Kerr. Then Spike announces he was Linda's source, even though he wasn't, causing the more reasonable members of the school board, or the UK equivalent, to say, "This issue is settled. Release Linda." Linda goes free to a huge cheer from her peons, but Spike is expelled from school and kicked off the Junior Gazette. "Spike, why did you lie? They couldn't have held me forever. The thought of you in detention, it was more than I could bear. I don't know what to say. Just answer me this. Could you ever love a handsome reprobate such as myself? In another time or place, perhaps. You see, I am in love with Matt Kerr. His words, his wit, his wisdom. And there is something about older men that makes me fuzzy-faced and wonky-eyed. Well, don't I feel a proper fool? I should have seen the writing on the wall. Not on the wall. In tomorrow's edition when we announce our engagement. I'll never forget you, Linda. You were too aggravating. The Junior Gazette proudly reinstates Linda as editor-in-chief, but it's Fraz who writes the headline for the next edition. Linda and Matt Kerr, their future was written in the stars. Produced by Sandra C. Hasty." Wow, Matt. That was something. Definitely, definitely something.
Right. I'm going to call a halt to this one. We've got a snappy episode for a snappy part two. We can reconvene at a later date for...
Hold on, the last word!
Well, of course, don't worry. I hadn't forgotten the lyric.
I just wanted to say quickly that thanks, guys, for having me on as well. And, you know, if I manage, you want me back at any other point, I will gladly come along. But,
we like the idea of having guests. And if you want to be a guest... Be aware that we may record at some crazy times. Drop us a line at lastwordpodcast@gmail.com and we'll put you on the guest waiting list and let you know what crazy time we're recording at next. And if you're available, you can be on as long as you can record your own voice in a high quality MP3 and send it to me as well. That's, as long as you can do that and you want to be on the episode, you can do that and you're available at the time. Send us and we'll put you on the waiting list.
Fantastic.
At Illyrio, there is now nothing more to say. Oh, well, hang on a second, though, Joe. Yes. Where else can we find you on the internet?
Oh, the 11th Hour podcast?
Yeah.
But also, Joe and Chris Do a Thing. That would be, I guess, where would be the easiest place to go? At JCDoThing on Twitter.
Yeah, or jcdothing.blogspot.com.
Yeah, jcdothing@gmail.com for the email.
Right. And now, definitely, there is nothing else to do but ask Illyrio, my good sir, for the last word.
The last word is bulbous.